Welcome to Ed Talk with Tamara. Today, we're going to be talking with one of the founders of Starbright Community. It is a nonprofit working with neurodiverse individuals and helping with collaboration and resources for the neurodiverse community. Today, we have Andrew Tayas. Andrew Tayas, welcome. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here and really excited to talk about Starbright.
Tell us a little bit about what Starbright Community is. I mean, I said it was a nonprofit. I know you're working with neurodiverse individuals. Give us a little bit of the background of the mission and vision.
Sure. Starbright Community is a nonprofit corporation. It's just formed this year. Its mission is to raise awareness of neurodiversity and to help families, individuals, therapists, and advocates, and educators, and others to connect with each other and to also collaborate to access resources to support neurodiverse needs. And I think that's really kind of encapsulates the mission as to why Starbright Community was formed, but it also highlights a little bit about what led to Starbright being created in the first place.
Well, that's a really great segue into my next question, is why did you feel the need to create this type of organization?
Well, Starbright Community is just brand new, but the work behind it has really been going on for the last couple of years. And that has in part to do with a couple of different programs and events that are geared towards the neurodiverse community. One of those is neurodiverse learning retreats and conferences that have been held over the last year and a half. And through those, we've had some really amazing experiences, both meeting people who themselves are neurodiverse and have been participating in our events as speakers and presenters and been able to share their stories and to both present their own experience, but also the work that they're doing as advocates, as champions, as business owners of organizations that are working to support the neurodiverse community. And I think that's been really, really, I think, a key and central idea behind the creation of Starbright is that we realize that we need to create an organization specifically to kind of carry that forward. But then also there's the work in terms of education and learning through a program called Hello Homeschool, delivered by Infinite Learning Academy, where homeschooling families, to a large extent, families that have taken their children out of the public education system because they simply haven't been able to get the support and the resources that they need for their children who themselves are neurodiverse. They're not fitting in the system, basically, right? And so they've had to work outside the system. And Hello Homeschool has provided a resource to help with their learning and education needs. And I think has demonstrated that supporting neurodiverse individuals, neurodiverse families is not impossible to do and is very possible to do if you have the right understanding and the right mindset for how to do that.
Absolutely. We've had other podcasts before where we've talked to educators, we've talked to parents, and we have definitely discussed that, the types of resources, what is out there for traditional schools, for homeschooling, and now even the movement with microschools, learning pods, all of that stuff. Now, tell us a little bit more about why you, what is your personal involvement, or why did you choose to get involved with this type of work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm a director. I'm one of the board of directors for Starbright Community. I'm the president of the organization. But, you know, on our board of directors, everybody on our board has some connection to neurodiversity, autism, ADHD. And my personal experience goes back to my childhood, where my cousin was diagnosed with autism, severe autism, and as he grew up, had very limited sort of verbal capacity, was never able to live on his own independently. And I remember growing up and sort of trying to interact with him and trying to understand him and understand why he was the way he was, trying to understand how to engage with him. And then when I went to school, to college, I actually studied psychology and I majored, my focus was in cognitive development. And I just remember learning more as part of that work. I was working with neurodiverse youth, so emotionally and physically and cognitively, as they were called, sort of disabled youth. And the research at that time, I remember just being so deficient. So even as an area of focus of study, there wasn't a lot that was available to help us understand how to support and understand the neurodiverse perspective.
Now, I'm not trying to give your age away or anything like that, but can you tell us, like, approximately, because I know my personal situation, I know when I started off in education, you know, over 25 years ago, there was very limited research. And I remember specifically my own experience at age 15, trying to search out information about neurodiversity. And the only book I could find, and there was no word neurodiverse at that time.
Exactly.
But at age 15, you know, I was babysitting a child with autism, and I could only find one little skinny book about Temple Grandin.
Right.
And we know her. If we're in the world of autism and neurodiversity, we know Temple Grandin. So how long ago, especially because you talk about your cousin and you talk about being in college, like how many years, how much change has taken place? Because I know exponentially it has changed. And especially in the last 10, even 5 years, it has changed. We're now at 1 in 36, right? Diagnosed with autism.
Right,
so.
Right. And so, yeah. So I went to college in the mid-90s, in the early to mid-90s. And, you know, I grew up in the late 70s and early 80s with my cousin. And there was very little known about autism. There was very little known about what it was. Very little known about how to understand the neurodiverse perspective. And I remember even going into college in the 90s, the mindset was very much looking at it as a disorder, right? That it's diagnosed, it's a disorder, it's something that needs to be medicated. Mm-hmm. It needs to be trained away, or it needs to be untaught in terms of behaviors. Or, you know, kind of the opposite end of the spectrum there was, oh, there's nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically hopeless. Their life is over. Your parent, you know, the parent's life is over. And it was seen as kind of a devastating.
Thank goodness it's changed.
Yeah.
So much has changed. Because same thing, my experience. And I'm really happy about changes that we have and the resources we have out there. And from what I understand and read, this is Starbright Community helping with those resources.
Yeah.
and the new research.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I think there's a lot to be said, of course, for research and what research can help us do. But I think what I've seen also being involved with many sort of research organizations and research-driven organizations over the years is how you translate what you learn in research into practice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's really what we've seen over the last couple of years. And I think that was maybe sort of advanced to some degree by COVID and a lot of the educational options that really popped up and became available and that people started to take advantage of. And so we've seen that there's been a lot more focus on trying to understand individual needs. So this is not just learning styles, right? I mean, we've seen that kind of movement, people's learning styles,
right,
and how do we tailor presentations and lessons and educational material to different learning styles. But I think this is an extension of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is understanding that people are processing information differently in an inherently different way. And taking the time to actually understand what that means.
Meeting them where they're at.
Meeting them where they're at. Tailoring it to what they're... And what we've seen, and I think what we've seen over the last couple of years in these types of programs and these types of events is that it's not that hard. It's not that impossible, you know, pipe dream that, oh, well, if we could just individualize everything for everyone. No, it's understanding what the needs are and matching them with the resource that's best suited for their own learning needs, their own learning capacity, their own learning capabilities, and seeing them thrive.
I love that. I love that matching the individual or the families with the resources they need to help them thrive. I love that. That's amazing.
And so what we've seen is that there's not a lack of resources. So people who are feel trapped within the public education system to a large extent feel like they're not getting the right kind of resources, the right kind of support, that schools aren't following through on their IEPs, their individual education plans. But what we've seen is that that's not necessarily the case. There are people out there who are quite adept and quite skilled at working with neurodiverse individuals, whether that's education, whether it's occupational therapy, whether it's behavior therapy. that there is a tremendous amount of very skilled people who, in fact, understand the best way to support neurodiverse individuals of all types. Mm-hmm. The challenge is connecting those with the families that that need them. That it's that they're often in their own communities. People aren't aware of these resources being out there.
Yes.
And that's a real, I mean, I find that very devastating to know that the support and the resource is there and they're simply not able to access it.
Well, and I think what I've learned through doing this podcast, I've ended up speaking with so many people in the neurodiverse community, even though I started this podcast, you know, it's Ed Talk, anything and everything educational. And this topic kept coming up because, you know, first of all, teachers want to do their best and they just can't do their best, right? Always, because they don't have the resources available. They don't have the time available, whatever right. it is
right.
in traditional setting. I think there's a lot of teachers out there that really want to do things. Same thing with parents. I think parents really, I know that these parents want the best for their children and they just don't know where to go. And a lot of times we're talking to our neighbor, we're talking to our friends, and there's something in our own backyard to help us out, right?
Right.
And so I really quickly found out that there's a lot of islands out there.
Correct.
People creating their own thing because they don't know other things exist. And so I really love the fact that you're building this, I want to say kind of network. Is that a correct term?
Yeah. And I think it's important to see. We have the vision and the goal with Star Bright Community is that we want to have in-person events in different communities across the country, right? Because not everybody can make it to Florida or to California or to right. wherever, you know, some of these larger events take place and happen. We see lots of these very large conferences that kind of travel around to different places. And we want to be one that comes to the communities that need and want it most. So part of it is having these in-person events so that we can identify local resources, local organizations, local experts, and bring them there, as well as bringing expertise from across the country to local communities, and then building that network then from that. So building a resource that can live beyond that in-person event. So developing a connection and an international and national and localized network of experts that families can then access on a continuous basis. So through building a digital platform where we'll be able to harness these in-person events into connections and resources and contacts, families will be able to not only identify what's the right resource they need by tapping into, you know, a broad network that's really sort of global in scope of what's out there and who's doing what and what are the different ways to do things, because that's one thing we're finding. Mm-hmm. There's not one way to do education. There's not one way to do behavior therapy. There's not one way to do occupational therapy.
That's right. Because if you meet a person with autism, you met one person with autism. And I think it goes with neurodiversity as well. When, you know, everyone is different. We just need to accept and meet people where they're at. And I really think this work that you're doing is amazing. Now I want to move forward because I heard you talked about events. So you're going to be having an event coming up, I believe, October. Is that correct?
That's right. So we're planning our big annual event. So we typically try and plan smaller events, very personal, very sort of small scales to be very intimate.
Is that your local ones that you do
around the country? So those are local ones that we do kind of around the country. And then we try and plan one larger event during the year. Last year we had one in Hutchinson Island in Florida, which was amazing and wonderful. This coming year, we're going to have another one in the Woodlands, Texas, so north of Houston, October 18th, 19th, and 20th. It's going to be a fantastic setting for a fantastic event. We're looking for still speakers and sponsors and sort of organizations in and around the Houston area that work and have an interest and have the expertise to support families. But also, we're going to invite some national speakers as well.
Are you accepting vendors and exhibitors as well?
Yes, we are still accepting vendors. We're still accepting exhibitors, applications and sponsorships for the event. We have a number of speakers that will be coming to the event, sponsored by some different organizations. So, for example, we have a couple of speakers who are part of the Doug Flutie Foundation for Autism. They're speakers that have spoken in a number of different events across the country, and they're going to be coming and sharing their expertise and their own experience themselves for the neurodiversity.
And that's something that I've heard of that's pretty unique to your conferences. Is it true that the majority of your speakers are neurodiverse?
Yeah, and I think that represents kind of a core principle that we have, is that we don't host these events to speak about people who have autism. We host these events to raise awareness and understanding of autism. And what better way to do that than to have somebody who themselves is neurodiverse there to present their own perspective, to present their own expertise, to present their own ideas about how to understand autism. And that's exactly what we saw last year at our event, was, you know, some really tremendous insights, some incredible aha moments, and really moving presentations that, you know, if we had come, you know, had an academic or, you know, somebody who is neurotypical talking about somebody who is neurodiverse, you don't get the same insight and you don't get the same perspective. Right. And I think that's really, really key to the success of our events. And that's what Starbright wants to be, is a resource and a network and a community for individuals who also have that mindset, who have both a need and an interest and a desire to understand others with neurodiversity and to put in contact with each other, either the ability to take advantage of resources that are already out there, or, you know, in some cases, to create the resources that don't exist yet are needed.
Well, this is perfect, because if you have someone that wants to get in touch with you to help with collaboration, to offer their services, the resources, or someone who needs resources, what is the best way to reach out to Starbright Community?
Absolutely. I think the best way to reach out to us is to email us at starbright@starbrightcommunity.org.
Starbright@starbrightcommunity.org. All right. That's perfect. And does that go the same for, I just go back on my notes here, vendors, exhibitors, you said sponsors and speakers even for the event coming up in October. In, you said north of Houston?
North of Houston in the Woodlands in Texas, okay. Yes. So, yes. Or you can go to our website, starbrightcommunity.org, and you can locate the links there. We'll have links for speakers and for, of course, participants and vendors and sponsors as well. So you can find on our website information about the activities that we're doing for our annual event and any other events that we have going on, as well as information about our network of resources and our community of people who are working with neurodiverse families, individuals, and advocates. Everything is going to be there. So reach out there. If you want to just skip all that and email us directly, feel free to do that as well.
And I saw a few links. I got the sneak peek of the website. There's a couple of links for resources around the country on the website.
Yes.
So that's great. So if you're out there and you need just access to resources, not just only, you can, of course, email them at starbright@starbrightcommunity.org. I got that right?
Yes.
All right. But you can also go there, and they do have some resources listed on their website as well. So you can go there. Well, thank you so much, Andrew, for talking to us about Starbright Community and all the resources that it provides, or I shouldn't say all the matching it can help us with. That's resources.
Right. Well, thank you, Tamara, for letting me come on and talk about Starbright, because we're very excited about all the work that we're going to be doing this coming year.
Well, it's exciting. And I think I have a calendar date for October 18th, 19th, and 20th in Houston. So I'll see you there. Listening to Ed Talk. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Tamara, and if you have any questions or educational topics you would like us to discuss, feel free to reach out at edtalkwithtamara@gmail.com.